I'm Ava Hartling. Welcome back to the Brand is Female podcast. In this episode, I'm speaking with a change maker who's not only challenging how we think about menstrual care, but who's reshaping the products we use in the most intimate parts of our lives. Sarah Johns-Dardier is the founder and CEO of Revol Cares, a brand at the forefront of innovation with leak-proof underwear that's medically recognized, the only brand in Canada to have achieved that medical recognition. It is also toxin-free and designed with both comfort and sustainability in mind. Through Revol Cares, Sarah is taking on big issues. The lack of safety standards in period products, the harmful stigma that still surrounds periods, and the gaps that persist in women's health overall. She's done it all while raising capital, no small feat in a space that's often overlooked by traditional investors, and building a community of consumers who care deeply about health impact and change. Sarah's work is rooted in human-centered design and a clear mission to empower women and people who menstruate while raising the bar for what we should expect from the products we rely on each month. This is a conversation about advocacy through innovation, the power of purpose-led design, and what it takes to lead a movement that's long overdue. Let's get into it. This season of our podcast is brought to you by TD Bank Group Women in Enterprise. TD helps women in business achieve success and growth through its program of educational workshops, financing, and mentorship. Visit thebrandisfemale.com/podcast and follow the link to find out how TD can help you. Sarah, it's such a pleasure having you on The Brand is Female. I should say having you back on The Brand is Female because we've chatted at a live event in the past, but I'm so grateful you're making time for me this morning.
Well, thank you for having me back again. I am really excited to chat and update you on a few things.
And I've been seeing, a lot of new content, new developments around the brand. So I'm excited to get caught up on all things Revol. And for listeners who are hearing you for the first time and may not be familiar with the brand, I'm going to start these conversations the way I typically do. So I want to know, growing up, what kind of future were you kind of forecasting for yourself? What kind of career were you dreaming of? And was it at all connected to what you're doing today?
If I go back like really, really far, so when I was a little kid, we had just moved to Canada. I'm from Iceland originally. And the Sears catalog was a really big deal in my house. Coming from Iceland, which is a tiny, tiny country, there was nothing that existed like that. And I have this memory of going through the underwear section of the Sears catalog and thinking, wow, like this is someone's job to design these. Like, and just being like, I want to do that one day. And then it was like I put that idea to the side and completely forgot about it until way, way, way later. Because I would say for the most of like my teen years and even into university, I wasn't really ever thinking about being an entrepreneur or anything like that. But I do have this like very early day memory of being like, I wanna make underwear. Like from probably the age of like, I think I must have been like 7.
So in fact, you did dream of doing what you're doing today. Maybe the period underwear part wasn't connecting yet.
Exactly.
But, you were pretty close. And tell me a little bit about what led you to launch your brand. I'm assuming you did other things before becoming an entrepreneur. So tell me a little bit about your journey leading up to you deciding to start your business.
So I, kind of like I said, I put that idea on the back burner of being an underwear designer. But I, around the age of like 16, started to sew a lot. It became my like personal hobby. I decided to go into fashion design. I still was never really thinking I would be a designer. I always really liked the like technical aspect of design. So I really, really loved pattern drafting, which is like, there's not many people that love that.
Yeah. And that's pretty specific.
It's pretty specific. And then I started to niche my focus into swimwear. I wanted to do underwear, but there just weren't enough underwear companies, especially in Vancouver where I was living. I went to design school here in Vancouver and I started to just really focus on swimwear. I figured, like, okay, that's my like path to a really secure job. That was all I was going to do. When I was still in university, I started to kind of work with a local manufacturer, swimwear companies, and I just kind of started to like test the waters. Did I want to go big corporate? I also had a corporate job. And it was when I was actually a design intern at one of Canada's largest athletic brands. And I bled through my pad, through my jeans,
I remember that story.
onto a light gray chair in an open workspace. And it was that moment was so pivotal because I was just gunning for a corporate ladder career. Like that's what I thought I was going after. And I was so frustrated with my period because I felt like if I had to work on my period, it was just like I was a ball of stress. I was leaking and I could never get through the day. And so I was still in university at the time. There was a final project and it was design a garment that solves a problem. And so that's exactly what I did. I was like, I have this really annoying problem. I cannot get through a workday. And so I designed period underwear specifically for heavy flows because I have a really heavy flow, hence why I was always leaking. And that was kind of like the spark. That was the start of it. It was just a school project. Again, I didn't really have an intention of becoming an entrepreneur. I had a full-time job as the head pattern maker of a local manufacturer as soon as I graduated, and that's what I was going to do. And then I did that for about 8 months, and then I was like, okay, I need to go pursue this period underwear because I was getting random emails from random strangers being like, hey, I hear you make this underwear. Can I please get a pair? And eventually it became so much that I was like, okay, let's just start an
Do something
Etsy.
here.
Yeah, like let's start an Etsy shop. That's how I started. I had sewing machines in my mom's house. I would make one-off pairs. Like I even made them custom at one point. And so yeah, that's kind of like the very summed up how it started.
And obviously, it's a category that existed by that point. There were other solutions on the market. You decided to go and target heavy flow specifically. Did you have to do a little bit of R&D, like figure out, the best material for this? And there's a lot of conversations around, is period underwear actually safe? And we know even with athletic wear, we're wearing, material that is pretty much against our skin and pretty much against right next to our sexual organs all day long. And is that even safe? So I'm assuming that was a consideration too.
Part of the beginning that was so, I feel like I was so lucky was it was a school project. And so I had to show so much research behind why this was a better product, how I would improve the market. And I had like 4 months to do research, which I mean, like now I look back, I'm like, wow, like to have 4 months to just ideate and like do research, find suppliers, all that stuff. It was just like a really like it was like a blessing in disguise. At that point in time, I did a lot of research into the few medical studies that are available around how the vulva is, a highly absorbent tissue, or like the skin, the tissue of the vulva is highly absorbent. And so even though, we were seeing at that time, we were seeing issues with tampons and insertables having like toxicity and stuff like that, but we weren't really seeing that like stuff just touching your skin. Like we didn't know that at that time. I'm like first designing this in 2015. And so, but then I started to really like do that research into like, okay, what's available? I had been very prone to yeast infections. And so a doctor had told me just never wear synthetic underwear. Always wear natural underwear. And so when I designed it, I was going to use natural fibers because I had to. Like that was my only option. And so kind of like the culmination of all those factors was what I put into the underwear. Natural fibers, all certified because that was my background was, in garment and in technical apparel. I knew what certifications to look for and ask my suppliers for. And really just like from the start, it was about having like the highest quality, most breathable, most comfortable, but also highest absorbency because it had to solve what I needed it to solve. And that was a huge problem to solve. Like that took a lot of R&D. It was definitely, I did not get it on the first go. I remember, wearing my prototypes and leaking through the first ones and be
Oh,
like,
no.
oh, okay, like that did not work. Let's go back to the drawing board. And then eventually, like getting to where it was like a product I could wear for like 8 to 12 hours with nothing else. I really wanted it to be like that it was a product you didn't need to pair with other things. Like you didn't need to wear a menstrual cup with it because a menstrual cup is a sustainable solution, but for me it was really uncomfortable. I couldn't, like I just could never get behind. I tried for a long time, and so I really wanted it to be that the underwear lasted a full day without having to use anything else. And then obviously now, almost 10 years later, since I designed the first prototype, we've seen a lot of this stuff come out with forever chemicals like PFAS being used in fabrics for finishings, down to we're seeing it with like synthetic leggings. Like that's the newest thing of like these fabrics are not really great to be close to the skin. It's really afforded us a level, like a standard above having started from a place of have like ticking all the boxes and making sure we're really safe. So when those things started to come out, we just started to get third-party testing, verifying that, oh yeah, okay, we are totally toxin-free. We are like Prop 65 compliant. We do all our absorbency testing. All of that, because our product was built on being able to be like that, we then were able to show all this certification, which eventually led to us becoming the first medically recognized leak-proof underwear on the market. So,
Amazing.
yeah, it kind of
Congrats.
all like built up into that. And that was a huge, huge accomplishment for, I think, us and just for the industry as well. Like to have period underwear be recognized by a medical body, I think is a huge achievement. So, really
Yeah,
proud of that.
congrats.
Thank you.
And I want to talk about, I mean, you had experience working in a athletic wear company, starting your own business, and obviously you knew a little bit about, the fashion part of it, but obviously starting a business from scratch, from the ground up is a whole other story. First question, how did you go about funding the business when you started? I'm assuming there were pretty intensive costs in terms of just the production inventory, the research you had to do. So how did you go about financing the business in the first few years?
I still to this day have no idea how I did it. No, I'm just
Mm-hmm.
kidding. I started with student debt. So I was quite literally the definition of bootstrapping.
Yeah.
I met my now husband 8 months after I launched my Etsy shop. So like very
Okay.
early days. So I always say he's my co-founder because
Yeah.
we really built the business together. But he as well, like we both just had student debt and not a penny to our names. But my mom bought me my first sewing machine and financed that for me. I was able to hit really low minimums on like fabric, and I would take every dollar I earned from my when I was still working. I eventually quit my job to be able to focus as much energy into Revel Cares, but then I worked as a waitress in the evenings, and
Okay.
I literally had I'm very pleasant and kind, and so I ha always had really good tips, and so I literally took all of my tips and I put it into,
Invested
yeah,
in the
invested in,
business.
but even then it was like scraps. Like it was not a lot. I think I was working maybe 2 days a week, and we really took like every every dollar we made, we spread it into $5 somehow, and then just kind of like kept growing it from there. We really felt that, like, in the beginning especially, that building our customer base was the most important thing. We were definitely not profitable at that time, but we were able to like keep growing. And so what we did was we actually like we really honed in on farmers markets and like craft markets. At this time, I was still making the product, so we were like, craft market sweethearts, and there we built an incredible customer base. At every farmers market or craft show, we had a draw for like win three pairs, and we would get hundreds of people signing up every time. And that's really how we like built our, I think by year one, we had 10,000 people on our mailing list. And shortly after that time, COVID hit, so we obviously flipped to being online. And when we went from being a pretty much solely farmers market company and like an Etsy shop, basically, we built a website really quickly. And then we emailed those 10,000 people saying, "Hey, we're no longer doing farmers markets, obviously," and flipped it to online. And literally have like, I mean, have looked back, but haven't looked back since. We haven't really done farmers markets since. And yeah, like all those days, it was just really, it was a lot of grit. It was a lot of hard work. And my husband, Mayo, and business partner, we just did all of it together.
Thank you to TD Women and Enterprise for their support of The Brand is Female. You've got it in you to succeed. Let TD help guide you. Visit thebrandisfemale.com to learn more. At what point did things shift? Because today you're selling, you don't do the craft markets anymore. You're selling to major retailers, major pharmacy chains, across Canada. So when did it shift from like artisanal, like craft production to no, we're serious business, delivering to some pretty heavy duty retail names?
So in around 2022, I could see, obviously, like we had, gone through COVID. We were an online business. We'd kind of stopped the made to order. We were stocking our own online shop, but it was still very like limited. We were always sold out. We were still locally made at that time, and we had like the most wide breadth of home sewers to local manufacturers, and we were just tapping out at everything. We still were completely bootstrapped at that time. I look back, I'm like, I still don't know how we did it, other than we
It
did. We
happens
hustled. We
magically.
hustled really hard. At one point, like short tangent, but at one point, Mayo and I, we couch flipped. So we found free couches online, cleaned them up, posted them, and we just like made pure profit. And for like, I think it was like 6 months of like COVID, we literally used that to fund the business. So we've always been very scrappy and always found our way through. But when around and around 2022, we really saw like customers were telling us, we'd heard it when we were at farmers markets, that they weren't used to buying their period products online. Even though it seems so natural that we would see that trend online, we have big competitors that are online focused. What I would get when I met people in person, especially when we did farmers markets, they would say, "Oh, I just drove here like an hour away. I want the Freya, I want the Kim, I want the Charlie. This is my size." And I'd say, "Okay, well, clearly you've been on our website." And they're like, "Oh, yeah, I've like done all my research." And I was like, "Okay, well, we have free shipping. Like, why didn't you just buy online?" And they would always respond, "Well, I don't really buy my period products online. I wanted to get it now. I have my period coming. I want it now." And it was those like early days that really sparked the idea of, okay, well, we need to be where people can buy it when they need it. Not that we're going to be this like online brand that takes 2 weeks for them to get it. And so we started to develop our retail ready line. We were still locally made at that time, and we were like, okay, if we're gonna start selling to stores, that's like much higher volume. Like, how are we gonna manufacture this? We ended up accessing some debt financing to be able to move our manufacturing overseas. Mm-hmm. We received our first inventory in early 2023, and we launched at, there's a like a health food trade show called CHFA. Mm-hmm. We launched there, I think it was April of 2023, and it quite literally exploded for us after that point. It was clearly, the customers wanted it, the stores wanted it, that demand was incredibly high. We had gotten that medical recognition right when we received our product. We were the first medically recognized. We presented that to the buyers, and we got into stores like London Drug, Safeway, we're in Sobeys, Pharmasave. Mm-hmm. Pharmasave was a huge partner of ours in the beginning. And also in the States, we're in a number of grocery stores like Kroger, Fred Meyer, independent pharmacies there as well. And a lot of that just happened. We were, you know, obviously we have an incredible product, our product works, but we also just knew that the market really needed it. They, mm-hmm. you know, customers wanted that, the safety and the standards. And I think that we're able to show that, obviously, with the recognition on our packaging. And yeah, we were able to, you know, really at that point grow very fast. And at that point, cash flow was coming in much faster. But it was still extremely capital intensive. So it was not without its battles. We, you know, grew almost too fast. Like, we grew at such a rocket pace that first year, that the second year, just this past year, we really had to focus on nurturing the stores that we had, because we kept having, we kept being in a sold out position. And yeah. So we would have no inventory, and retailers are not very happy.
Yeah, they don't like that.
So that was kind of our focus in the last year, of just making sure we got through. And then we raised our seed round in January. And that's really now for the next phase.
And how did fundraising work out? And I think that it seems, at least, and from having had conversations with female entrepreneurs in kind of the femtech space and women's health space, there's a little bit more appetite. There's a little bit more, you know, space to support businesses in these categories. Did you fundraise in Canada, and how did you go about it?
Yeah, I fundraised. All of my investors are in Canada. They're actually like almost all in the Lower Mainland. So okay. Like close to me, which is really nice, because then, you know, I get to see them at events and stuff yeah. like that. But it, yes, there is like definitely more interest in women's health and femtech now. You're seeing it. What I would actually say it was a big component for us was that for like about 8 months prior to raising, I was doing a lot of networking. I was doing yeah. a lot of in-person events, speaking. I got to speak, you know, at your event.
Yeah.
And I really made that my full-time job. You know, they always say raising is your full-time job. I made networking my full-time job the 8 months prior to raising. The raising part actually only took 6 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I raised it from December 1st to January 15th. So like over the holidays, which everybody would say, do not do that.
Yeah.
But I did. It was, you know, for us, it was the timing. We had some stores adding more stores, and we really needed to expand. And, you know, I had kind of been networking for 8 months and telling people, yes, I'm going to raise. I just, you know, the timing hadn't been right. And so when I did, it felt more like I was opening up an opportunity rather than kind of going out and asking for funding. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it was truly like, you know, they say your network is your net worth.
Net worth.
And I 100% agree. Like, that was what afforded me the speed and the ability to raise so quickly. And so, yeah, it was an incredible experience. I have incredible investors that joined. They really obviously can see that this space is growing. There's so much opportunity. But I would say, like, the most important thing is that they are very supportive of me as a founder and my team and my husband, and really see that we're going to be the ones that are going to be able to take this and run with it. And I think that's, like, key. That's what I've learned over the years, is, like, you really need to find people that align with you and really see that passion in you and get excited by the passion that you have in your business. Because at the end of the day, it's like, you have to be the one that takes on all the battles. And these people are there to support and are very helpful, but, like, you still have to be the one to, like, run into the fire when it's happening. And
yeah.
So yeah, I'm very proud of our raise. It was incredible. And yeah.
If you could go back in time, is there something you would do differently? Is there something, you know, you learned along the way and you're like, we didn't need to waste time on this, or I should have done this a different way? What would be different about the process?
Probably, like, as much as I am a huge supporter of Canadian made and Canadian focused businesses, we were really focused on being Canadian made for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I have such a support for the garment manufacturing industry here in Canada. While it is small and it's quite literally dwindling, mm-hmm. we really fought to kind of keep it here for, I would say, maybe a little longer than we should have. You know, I think you gotta keep up the good fight, but yeah, at some enough. Point we had quite literally tapped into every resource we could here mm-hmm. locally. And we were maxing out every crevice and space we could. Mm-hmm. And we looked at the volume that we needed to hit. And, you know, there was just no question that we had to move overseas. Yeah. And so, yeah, and I'm not one to really look back and say, oh, I wish I could have done something different. I think, you know, you go through life and you learn something from everything you do. Mm-hmm. And so I'm actually a big component of, like, I don't regret. But it's, like, one of those things where it's like, if I could go back, I would probably just push us to go and take mm-hmm. that leap. It wasn't incredibly, like, it's not a small thing to move your manufacturing overseas.
Yeah.
It took a lot of effort, took a lot mm-hmm. of trial and error, and eventually having to visit. And, you know, so it's, yeah, you know, maybe it all happened when it was supposed to happen.
Yeah. And you kind of, you built up, you know, the business to realize that yeah. was needed as a next step. And if you had to share 2-3 pieces of advice to women in business, you know, who are creating something in the same space or something different, what are 2 or 3 lessons that you learned in addition to, you know, you should look at manufacturing overseas earlier yeah. if it makes sense for your business, but, you know, maybe pieces of advice that you've gained along the way?
Yeah. A couple things, you know, I would say, I kind of touched on it, but, like, your passion in your business has to be the thing that you can lean on through the tough days. If you are going mm-hmm. into a garment business, or if you're going into a product-based business, those things they're not easy. They're not, mm-hmm. the scalability is incredible, but it takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of capital. Mm-hmm. And I always talk about my pilot light. It is the thing that no matter the storm, the pilot light never goes out. And I always think of that as, like, my kind of guiding light of, like, okay, this might be the hardest thing that I think I'm going through, but my pilot light is still on. I still have the passion. I still have the drive to keep going and get through it. And I really lean into that whenever I feel like things are, it just at every stage you grow, there are different challenges that you face. And I think having that knowledge of knowing that your passion is the thing that that's what matters, that's what can get you through any problem. We have an Icelandic saying that is it's þetta rættast, and it literally just means it'll be fine. And I just move through life like always thinking it'll be fine, like we will find a solution. So kind of back to that like same pilot light thing, but like there's always a solution to every problem. You sometimes have to get gritty, sometimes you have to be creative, you have to find, you know, you have to flip couches to make ends meet, but there is just always a way, and
there's always a solution.
I fundamentally believe that. And then I guess my third piece of advice, which really was important to me and part of how I've been able to scale the business, is get coaches for whatever it is that you are not confident about in your business.
What you're not good at.
You're not good at, you know, they say hire people who are better at you, which I totally agree. No. But then I also say work on the things that you need help in.
Yeah.
In the past year, I've had, you know, I have a wellness coach. I have a performance coach who is literally like an acting performance coach who works with CEOs.
I remember you talking about that.
And that is like the one of the things that unlocked my comfort with my speaking and
pitching investors
and stuff like that, because that's really, as a CEO, what you end up spending most of your time doing. And then for me, having like a technical garment background, I'm a genius when it comes to the product. I know my customer, I know what they need, I know all those things, like very rooted, very fundamentally. Finance, numbers, those things were not something that I had ever even really learned. I didn't know them. I knew I had a good sound business, I knew that our margins were good, but a year ago I didn't have like a great understanding of the numbers in my business. And so I brought on a fractional CFO who has been far more than a fractional CFO. She has been a mentor and a coach when it comes to understanding the numbers of my business. And that I really do feel like unlocked a lot for me when it came to raising, because obviously you have to understand those things to be able to show.
You have to know numbers really well.
You have to be able to show the business case of your business that, hey, this is something that we can take and we can and run with it. And so I really fundamentally believe focus on the things that you are maybe not so good at and like obliterate them. Like just like, you know, spend your time like actually becoming good at it, not faking it, but becoming good at it. And I would say like that has completely changed the trajectory for myself.
Love that. And what's the next big milestone that you're working towards for Ripple? What's the next big step? What's on your vision board? And what are you looking forward to?
We have a lot going on. It's been a very busy season for us right now. You know, we closed the raise. We're now able to really invest into inventory and build our store base again. So, you know, like I said, we kind of spent the last year nurturing, because it was really capital intensive to grow that fast. Now we're kind of able to do that again. Now we're able to kind of invest in inventory again, really focus on growth. We, you know, have been in contact with several large retailers. I'll just kind of leave it at that. There's a lot of expansion coming probably in the next like 12 months. And we're just really excited to, you know, expand our development. We have some new product lines coming, things that we have kind of had up our sleeve for some time.
Exciting.
So, yeah. My milestones, I can't really talk too much about, but they are coming and we're really excited about them. And it's just something that, you know, keep an eye on the shelf and hopefully it'll be expanding.
Love that for you. Well, it's been really impressive seeing the rapid growth and, you know, since we last connected. And I'm so glad that fundraising went so well for you. So super excited to see what's coming up next. And thank you so much for your time and, you know, the insights into your journey and sharing your knowledge with other women in business. So I look forward to staying in touch, and we'll link all the ways that our listeners can find Revolve Cares. And I'm seeing a ton of advertising and marketing. So obviously, you know how to find your community. Yes. So that's working out really well. And again, thank you so much, Sarah. It's been great watching your journey. And I look forward to seeing how you go break the next, you know, level of glass ceiling and get even more done for your brand.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for creating the space. And thanks for having me again.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for listening to the Brand is Female podcast. Please don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you to TD Women and Enterprise for their support of The Brand is Female. You've got it in you to succeed. Let TD help guide you. Visit thebrandisfemale.com to learn more.